British Sky Broadcasting, in association with Paramount Pictures, presents Elizabethtown. Audio described by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. A large container lorry backs up to a warehouse. Steel doors glide up, revealing an entire truckload of shoeboxes, all marked recalled. Two loaders look on with rueful, knowing expressions.
Welcome back, boys.
Starring Orlando Bloom as Drew Baylor.
As somebody once said, there's a difference between a failure and a fiasco.
A man in a dark suit and tie, aged about 27, sits rigidly upright. He's the only passenger in a company helicopter. He stares mournfully through the window at a forest down below, his eyes set on a notice which says, emergency exit, pull lever below.
Sweet silver angels over the sea, please come down flying low.
The executive helicopter glides over a city skyline and touches down on a landing pad at a plush corporate headquarters where the flags of many nations waft gently in a slight breeze.
When watch your head!
He was gone.
I'm fine! A failure is simply the non-presence of success. Any fool can accomplish failure.
I'm fine.
In the marble-floored office building, an identity tag is clipped to his jacket.
I'm fine.
Colleagues stare uneasily.
But a fiasco. A fiasco is a disaster of mythic proportions. A fiasco is a folktale told to others that makes other people feel more alive because it didn't happen to them.
I'm fine.
A blonde woman who checks her watch meets him in a shiny corridor.
I'm fine.
I'll take you to Phil C, don't get lost.
Mercury Worldwide Shoes, which is actually Phil, contains some of America's finest artists' masterworks, seen only by people heading for very important meetings. A promotion, or otherwise. We are not just employees, as Phil once said. We are denizens of greatness. Phil says the world is full of those who achieve through negativity or theft. We succeed through original thought.
In a flashback, he studies computer images of shoes.
A shoe is not just a shoe. It connects us to the earth. The right shoe can transport us. Make us believe we are capable of more. But there are sacrifices for a goal like pure greatness, like birthdays or last Christmas with my family.
Christ our Lord, amen.
Dig in and don't make fun of my cooking.
Well, this must be homemade.
Oh, Dad.
Though we sometimes celebrate odd things at Mercury, like the day the Italians invented rubber, which they didn't, of course, but that's beside the point.
Where exactly is Drew, anyway?
While his family celebrated Christmas, Drew was the hero at a rowdy office.
We contain magic in a shoe!
Celebration confetti fills the air. Some dance wildly on desks.
It was meant to approximate walking on a cloud.
Drew and the blonde woman exchange a special glance. She smiles and flickers her eyes at him before sidling up with a drink in her hand.
Hey, if you ever need anything around here, I'm your girl.
She kisses him gently and seductively at the side of his mouth. The same blonde is now driving him in an electric buggy along a corridor to the inner sanctum.
Any true student of functional shoe design is also a student of Phil himself. He is a master. And Phil's innate wisdom of what people want and need has never failed to date.
I'm fine.
He's also obsessed with the number two.
Valuable paintings adorn the wall.
These are Phil's prized two Norman Rockwells, the pair of paintings that once hung outside the White House office of John F. Kennedy. And yes, the two treasured doors Phil once purchased from a church on vacation in Tunisia and had sent back home for a total cost too enormous to mention. $762,000.
Each.
Just two more minutes and I can send you in.
Because we have a moment here, let me tell you that I have recently become a secret connoisseur of last looks. You know the way people look at you when they believe it's for the last time? I've started collecting these looks, and...
Okay, he's ready for you.
The blonde opens the hefty, ornate double doors and nods to Drew as she leaves.
There's one right now.
As Drew walks nervously into the expansive office, Phil perches, staring out of a wall-length window. Drew sees one of his designer shoes in a rubbish bin.
How are you, Drew?
I wanted to jump out of the window of that helicopter and just splatter on the trees, to tell you the truth.
Don't do that. It's only money.
Phil turns to look at him and gets to his feet.
The American psyche is in turmoil, Drew, and we have miscalculated.
I'm sorry.
Phil puts his jacket on.
I have no rule book for this situation. They tell me that we are about to lose 972... $1 million. I am ill-equipped in the philosophies of failure. Walk with me, Drew. My basketball team. They don't even know yet.
They stroll from a gym to a walkway overlooking a vast office.
My global environmental watchdog project will have to go. Sweet people. We could have saved the planet, but how do I make the concept of $972 million more real to you? It's the operating budget of a mid-sized country, a small civilization. It's big. It's so big, you could round it off to $1 billion.
In a windowed corridor, he takes Drew's hands.
I cry a lot lately. The promise of a global future, pinned to a groundbreaking shoe, your design, with a new form of material launched this week to great fanfare, and now meeting a growing international roar of laughter and rejection. Enough to cause this memo from Jeffrey Barlow, CEO of DCS, this once highly anticipated product may actually cause an entire generation to return to bare feet.
Drew smiles uncertainly.
Wow. We are about to enter a freefall plunge. And the sound you hear is the sound of shit hitting the fan. Globally.
Drew glances around.
I wish there was something I could do.
Actually, there is. In a room downstairs is a reporter from Global Business Today. We need to make him understand. We hired you from our national scholarship program. We supported, invested in your brilliance. This was a very creative endeavor. And I think you should stand up for your incredible work.
Drew nods slowly and looks sick.
You okay?
He meets with the reporter, who scratches in a notebook.
It's a little bit like knowing the plane's going down before anyone else, isn't it?
When does this run, a week?
A week. Come Sunday evening, I'll be on the stands. Any last words?
And in that moment, I knew.
I know we hired you at the last minute, but I'm just...
Success. Success, not greatness, was the only god the entire world served.
Now Drew lets himself into a modern apartment. He places his keys on the table and drops his shoulder bag to the floor with a forlorn look.
Home sweet home.
He takes from a drawer a savage-looking serrated knife and half smiles. Oh, yeah. He pulls an exercise bike from a cupboard and, with a screwdriver, starts dismantling bits.
8 years, night and day. Can you imagine? An entire life wrapped up in a shoe.
With gaffer tape, he attaches the knife to the handlebars with the blade pointing towards the seat. He finally tunes the mechanism before plugging the machine into an electrical socket and switching it on. He looks with a twisted sense of delight as the sharp knife prods backwards and forwards towards the seat. He increases the speed and stares at his handiwork, knowing that whoever sits on it will be the victim of a multiple exercise bike stabbing. He strings a pair of his failed designer shoes over the bike for good measure. Next, he starts clearing out his apartment. Clothes from the wardrobe, shoeboxes, a television, a laptop computer, a monitor screen with a picture of a blonde woman, and lots more. He dumps them all next to the rubbish bins outside. Back in his downsized room, he sits on the bike, flicks his black tie over his shoulder, and stares ahead, looking calm, serene, and ready to die. He checks with his finger the sharpness of the knife. As he gathers together the last thoughts in his troubled head, the gaffer tape gives way, and the knife plots harmlessly down. He slumps in sympathy. As he wearily begins the adjustments, his mobile phone sounds off, twitching wildly on a table. He stares at the phone and ignores it. He looks crossly at the phone. The knife is in place again. He takes a deep breath and is about to flick the power switch on. He sighs and gets off the bike.
Hello.
Drew, it's your sister.
I have some really bad news.
Could you call me tomorrow?
No.
Could you call me a little later?
No, honey. Dad died. He had a heart attack back in Kentucky. He was still visiting Uncle Dale. Mom's in total shock. You have to handle this. You're the oldest. You're the responsible one.
The phone falls in his hand. He looks shocked and dejected as he sits slumped on the killer bike in his bare apartment. He dismounts and wanders over to the window. His black tie is still flicked over his shoulder. Staring into the darkened street, he sees four men with flashlights loading into a truck all the possessions he dumped outside. He watches as two of them dance a jig in delight at their newfound riches. He stares curiously transfixed. Next, he walks with his mother and sister through an airport terminal. A bag is over one shoulder and he holds a suit in a protective cover over the other.
I don't know why he went to Kentucky. I don't know what the attraction was.
He was born there.
I never liked him there. They never have.
Drew will take care of everything. Honey, you understand I can't go because of the baby.
I'll be back in 2 days.
I'll man the phones.
I'll always be the one that snatched him away from them. The two sides of this family have never integrated well, so don't expect to make a lot of friends when you go there.
Drew doesn't make friends, Mom.
I have friends.
Do you have the blue suit?
I have the blue suit.
Oh, he loves that silly blue suit.
God only knows if I made him truly happy.
I'll call from Kentucky. I'll be there in the morning.
We have a plan.
We have a plan, and you hold your head up high, because don't you forget, you go back there as the most successful man in the history of this family. Don't let them try anything.
Oh, my God. I have to call people. I have to clean out the office. I'm a widow. We'll figure this out. We'll figure this out. Just get Dad home. Hurry.
I was still waiting for everything to start. Now it's over.
He kisses them.
I'll bring him home.
Wait, stay close. Come. Now, what was it that Dad always said? It wasn't this.
It would be something else.
Then you go. You go and you make him proud. And you call and tell me what's going on, okay? All right.
I would go to Kentucky, put my father in the blue suit, bring him home, and then get back on that bike. Nothing would stop the plan.
She wore faded jeans and soft black leather. She had eyes so blue, they looked.
A pretty blue-eyed air hostess changes into her uniform in a locker room. She adjusts her blonde hair in front of a mirror and stares intently at her peaches and cream reflection.
That's the way it goes. It'll all work out.
Drew sits on the bus to the plane.
There were times apart, there were times together. I was pledged to her for worse or better.
On the plane, the air hostess surveys an aisle of empty seats. She spots Drew sitting near the back, staring into space. As she saunters towards him, he closes his eyes. She studies his face in the dim light.
Sir. Sir. By flying this flight, you've helped save all our jobs. Definitely mine. Maybe even the entire airline. We would like to reward you with a free seat in first class.
I'm fine.
She crouches beside him.
Okay, let me try it like this. I'm really tired. Please don't make me keep walking all the way back down here all night long.
He looks uncomfortable as she hovers. She perches on the arm of the seat next to his.
Louisville, Kentucky, huh? Home, business, or family?
My dad.
Oh, where does he live in Louisville?
Actually, he's near Louisville.
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 Vol.
Louis.
Vol.
He's in Elizabethtown.
Oh, good. Hope someone's driving you, because the roads around there are hopelessly and gloriously confusing. Louisville.
I'll keep that in mind.
He switches the light off and closes his eyes. She turns it back on.
I'll try a quick map.
He sighs as she sits beside him.
I mean, I'm so happy we're sitting here having this conversation at 3 a.m. or whatever time it is. You know, it's such a great time. Everyone's sleeping but us. It's really nice to have a conversation with you and that you're really listening.
As she draws, the jet flies on through the night sky.
So you want to get to 264 and then you want to not miss 60B. I'm going to be obnoxious about that. Bends are strangely delightful and very intuitive. Complex, almost too complex to be around. Do you know any Bens?
I know one Ben.
Oh, I'm a student of names. For example, what's your dad's name?
Mitchell.
Mitchell.
Yep.
She smiles.
Or Mitch.
Mitchell is sometimes Mitch.
Huh. Son of a Mitch.
And today I was fired by a Phil.
Phil? Phils are dangerous. Phils are less predictable than Bens. Oh. And your girlfriend is a...
Ellen.
How's that going?
Sort of a wait and see.
Oh, yeah?
But then I waited and I saw.
I was gonna say, I have never had a good experience with an Ellen. Or a Phil.
How about with a Mitch?
Never met a Mitch I didn't like. Fun. Full of life, you know? You know what I mean when I say fun? Like, you want to be a part of Mitch's club. Am I close?
Close.
He's okay, right?
Yeah, he's...
He looks sad as he holds a drink. He stares into her eyes and they share each other's gaze with mutual attraction.
He's fine.
Well, you give him a big ol' hug from me.
He has a troubled, faraway expression.
I'm Claire, by the way.
Drew.
Nice.
Same to you.
Please. I'll let you sleep. Here's your map. Let me take this. I can handle this. Let go.
He reluctantly lets her take away the blue suit from the chair back in front of him. As she walks away with the suit on its hanger inside the protective cover, she glances back at him as though trying to puzzle something out. She watches as he turns off his seat light and closes his eyes. He dreams of childhood memories.
I am not asleep.
In the dream, a row of shoes.
I'm not.
A little boy with a big man looking after him.
I won't really be able to sleep.
Okay. Ready to go, Drew?
I'm not asleep.
Blue suit.
Losing your business. Louisville.
I am not I'll go next year. Come back.
The man in a white shirt and tie holds a cardboard box. The little boy grips a briefcase. The man and boy dance around an empty room with a shiny floor. The man affectionately places a hand on the boy's shoulder as they leave.
$1 billion.
Now he dreams of the office party when he was the hero. Claire wakes him.
Good morning! And congratulations, Drew. You've earned your wings as our 10 millionth passenger. And here is a coupon for any Four Diamond Hotel in the greater Western Kentucky area. Better move quickly. Lots of people behind you.
Drew turns to see rows of empty seats.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
And good luck with Ben.
Look, I know I may never see you again, but we are intrepid. We carry on.
They lock eyes before Drew leaves the plane. As he walks with his shoulder bag and the suit through the airport terminal, Claire appears behind him.
Drew! Rental cars around the corner. You'll see the signs. Bluegrass Parkway turns into exit 60B. Don't forget, 60B.
Okay, thanks.
In her smart uniform, she watches as he walks on.
You okay to drive?
I'm fine.
60B!
He gives a wave of the hand without turning. With a generous smile, she continues to watch him leave.
60B!
As she stares after him, she forms her hands into the shape of a camera and pretends to photograph him. She gives a shudder of delight before walking away. Drew glances at the coupon she gave him. Her name, Claire Colburn, is written on the flip side together with her telephone number. The note says, "Don't miss 60B. There's another number with an arrow saying, "Auto Club if you get lost." Now he drives along a wide freeway out of the city in his hire car. He sips a drink from a paper cup. He passes an open-air sports stadium with a sign saying Louisville Slugger Field. He crosses a bridge. Giant industrial barges are in the water below. A skyscraper block hosts a massive picture of a man with a white goatee beard and a white jacket with a sign saying Kentucky's Colonel. A road sign says Kentucky Derby Museum, next right. Drew takes another sip from his cup and gets out his mobile phone.
Uncle Dale! I'm in Louisville. Just landed. I'm on the road. 60B. Yeah. I have a map. Looking out for love. And I'll be there by 2 o'clock. Big, big love. I have the blue suit.
Later, he glances impatiently at his watch and grabs the map. He looks baffled as road numbers he doesn't recognize flash by. A sign says, "Welcome to Indiana."
Where is 60B? Shit, man.
Oh, man.
Did I miss 60B? Did I miss 60B? Did I miss 60B? God, no! Did I miss 60B?
The car rocks as he parks in a country lane. Now he's back on a main road again and looking desperate, he squints to see a sign.
Elizabethtown! Elizabethtown! Yes! Elizabethtown! Elizabeth! We're in! Oh yeah! Okay.
His car sweeps along a road flanked by wide grass verges, bushes and trees. The houses have open gardens where children play on lush green lawns. People stare at Drew's car. A girl walking on the pavement points him onwards. A family sitting on their porch also point him along the street. The American flag flies at many of the houses. A boy with a crash helmet and goggles rides his bike ahead of Drew, beckoning him to follow. He passes a shop window sign saying, "In loving memory of Mitch Baylor." An elderly man on a public bench waves to Drew. Looking bemused, Drew returns the greeting. A group of people wave from the steps and balcony of a public building. It's as if the whole town was expecting him. A boy excitedly displays a handwritten poster saying Spasmotica, the name of the shoe Drew designed. Drew shakes his head and smiles through the car window at him. He regally returns the cheery waves he gets from passers-by. The boy on the bike now dismounts and points Drew into a driveway, past a sign saying Clark Funeral Home. Ahead of him, a man in his early 30s with long sideburns waits, leaning against his car. Drew gets out and blows through his mouth as the heat of the southern sun hits him. He puts on his jacket, and gripping his father's blue suit, he steps towards the waiting man.
Oh, yeah. Jesse? Cuz.
The man in an open-neck shirt paces forward and grips Drew in a bear hug.
Cuz. This loss will be met by a hurricane of love.
In a cemetery, two men stand solemnly by a patch of marked-out land.
Charles Dean, meet the grown-up Drew Baylor.
Drew, it's good to see you.
Thank you. My condolences.
And here's my dad, your Uncle Dale.
Wonderful to see you again.
Well, Drew, this is Mitch's plot. And it has been in your family for 272 years. Now, I've endeavored to keep this area here clear for your daddy.
We're still discussing that issue. There is a possibility of cremation.
Charles Dean's podgy face freezes.
Well, now here's some of your daddy's personal things.
The brown wallet.
And here's his ring from West Point. Now, I don't know how y'all feel out there in California, but West Point sure does matter around here.
It matters a lot. Even though we now live in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
Drew is led into a chapel.
Everybody, this is Mitch's boy from California, one of the California Baylors. This is Drew. And just like your daddy was, we are all very excited about your 8-year triumph with that beautiful shoe.
They all stare at Drew from the pews as Dean pats him on the shoulder and steps away. Drew looks uncomfortable.
My condolences to all.
Dean sighs. Later, Jesse has a private word.
No, sir, I'm not going to let you feel bad because that was from your heart. But let them say condolences to you.
I thought condolences was...
It's an incoming phrase.
Jesse leads Drew to another room and holds back. Drew pauses at the doorway, ill at ease, before stepping in. Flanked by floral displays, the body of his father lies in an open coffin. A folded American flag is in the bottom half of the casket. Dean stands behind Jesse and Drew with his hands clasped.
Did I not capture your daddy?
I don't know what the word is. It's just a look I never saw before. What's the word?
Drew, if you just move around a bit, you will see different aspects.
Dean plonks a box of tissues on the side of the coffin.
Go ahead and cry.
Drew moves closer to the coffin and stares curiously at the body, desperately trying to think of a word that describes the expression on his father's face.
What's the word?
Drew moves around, his eyes constantly on the body that's been dressed in a dark suit, a white shirt, and a red tie with white spots. The lips form a fanciful smile. It looks almost as if he died in the middle of telling a joke. Drew's nostrils flare a little.
Whimsical. The word is whimsical.
From this day on, I own my father's gun.
Hey, why not?
We dug a shallow grave beneath the sun. I laid his broken body down below the southern land. It wouldn't do to bury him where any Yankee stands.
As Drew leans in, concentrating on the craggy, suntanned face in the coffin, the lips of the corpse appear to form a broader smile. Drew looks satisfied with this illusion and hesitantly stretches his hand into the casket to touch his father's hand. As soon as the hand makes contact, he withdraws it, but then repeats the exercise and rests his right hand on his dead father's knuckles. He seems to have formed a bond. I wear my father's gun. Now mourners assemble at a substantial three-story detached house with verandas and lawns for the funeral wake. The kitchen stove is at full blast as corn fritters, sausage rolls, and other southern delicacies are being prepared. Jesse presents Drew to the hostess, a silver-haired, jolly woman in an apron.
Dora.
Look what I found.
Oh, my God. Look at Mitch's face. You look just like your daddy and husband. We'll go home. Wait just a minute. I got to talk to Drew.
We hope you're going to stay for a while.
No, you really not.
Other smiling relatives hug Drew like he was a long-lost son. Jesse flexes his arm.
This is your blood.
And that Samson, my son. Clearly up to no good. Samson.
Hey! Uncle Mitch always wanted us to meet. Everybody says we look alike.
There's no resemblance.
Weird, huh? It's like looking in a mirror.
Hi, Drew. Hi. Drew, I'm Connie. I wish you daddy's first girlfriend.
Hi, Drew. I'm Charlie. I just want to say that I'm a huge fan of shoes and the work you've done in the shoe business.
Absolutely.
We'll talk. All right.
We got memorial plans to discuss.
Your daddy was one of my 10 most favorite people.
Did miss him when he went out west.
Drew, I'm E. Russell Marlowe with the American Legion in Bardstown, Kentucky. Drew, I want to sign you up for the American Legion or the Sons of the Legion, and I got a hat that I want to give you as a souvenir in honor of your dad.
Drew looks completely overwhelmed and emotional. Aunt Dora asks a question of nobody in particular.
Bill Bailey's
Jesse's young son, Samson, eyes a table in a side room where a joint of ham waits. Two dogs sit close by, one licking its lips. Samson tosses the ham onto the floor, and the dogs hungrily pounce on it. As people rush towards the dogs in alarm, Dale rescues the joint of ham. Later, an old man sleeps in an armchair, and he grimaces as Samson has a tantrum. Dora shows Drew into her bedroom, where photographs line the walls and surfaces.
So come on in. You know, it's not every day I invite good-looking men to my bedroom, but I just wanted you to meet your family, the Baylors and the Conleys. Let's start with Dickie Conley. Now, he was an alcoholic. He had a drinking problem, and he also had three nipples. And he was a poet.
Samson grabs cake from a table where a sad-faced old man sits impassively.
How's your mother, Drew, honey? You know, I really should have a picture of her in here. And this picture is...
Dora!
I'm coming! Lena! Lena, just watch over it. 2 more minutes. I'm coming. This was the last picture taken of your daddy. This was just 3 days ago, Drew. He was the most loving man.
Dora!
Coming! Why don't you stay as long as you need to?
Drew stands in the room of memorabilia, looking at the photo of his father. He glances around, observing other family pictures and sketches. He goes outside for a breath of fresh air, looking emotionally drained. His eyes widen in shock as he sees Samson in the driving seat of a car in the driveway. Drew runs towards him as the little lad starts the engine and reverses.
Hey! Samson!
Drew grabs the boy through the open window as others pour from the house.
All right, boy? You all right?
Oh, my God!
Where the hell's his father?
That's what I want to know.
What happened?
Hey, who taught you that dress?
What the hell taught you that dress?
What do you mean?
You got to keep your eye on him.
Definitely the
family's
hero.
Oh, come on.
A man in a flowery red shirt bursts in.
So,
Y'all obviously made a group decision not to call and invite me.
They all stare in embarrassed silence.
Hi, Bill Banion, how are you? Good to see you.
How long are you going?
Bill Banion, how are you? Good to see you. I hear Drew Baylor's here. Hey, Connie, how are you? Is this Samson?
It is. This is Samson.
Come here, Samson. How you doing? Give me a big boy hug.
Oh! Whoa! Samson is sick over the new arrival.
Sorry, why don't you just come to the kitchen? Good to see you. You kid.
Drew, can I have your autograph, please?
At dusk, the party takes to the garden. Drew autographs a leaflet advertising the Spasmodica shoe for a girl.
Where can I find an original model of Adidas SL72s?
That boy is looking for rules from you.
Blame me, everybody does.
You can't be a kid and raise a kid.
Dad, I'm taking this moment to tell you that I'm untraditional.
When we celebrate the life of Mitch, we're going to do it with no tears. We're going to do it with excitement, and I'll take care of everything.
All right.
We know what's up, and it's shoes.
God, we're so much alike.
But I teach him things that everybody should know. I teach him about Abraham Lincoln and Ronnie Van Zant. Because in my house, they are both of equal importance.
You don't get what I'm saying. You can't be buddies with your own son.
Dale shakes his head as he holds his son's gaze. Jesse ignores the telling off and smiles. Next, Drew walks along the road with Jesse. Drew holds a cardboard box in his luggage. Jesse holds a sleeping Samson.
Beautiful night. Does it ever cool off?
No, this time of year it's hotter than the hinges of hell. We got stars, though.
Clusters of stars shine in a cloudless velvet sky. Now Jesse pours them both a drink as they sit at his kitchen table.
See, I'm surprised your mom didn't make it.
Yeah, she's pretty broken up. She sends her love to everybody, though.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame her. Around here, their favorite thing to do is to get offended by something small and hold on to it for 50 years. Of course, you and your dad were close.
Oh, very close. I knew him very, very well. He was my dad. We were actually going to drive here together this year. Then it became next year, and... No. I knew him very well. Mm. Very, very well. Mm. Very well.
Yeah, I don't know my dad very well either. That was my band. This was the show we opened for Lynyrd fucking Skynyrd. Two of the original members.
Cool.
Drew stares at a music poster.
Ruckus. Keep going. Keep going. Right below the reggae tribute. Look at that. Ruckus. Well, we almost opened for him. It's a really long story. We never played, and we never played since.
And now you fix computers.
All those postcards I sent to Birmingham. All the way from those windows of Amsterdam. Coptogram from Dapper Sam. Just a four-letter man in another jam. Oh, yeah.
Jesse mimics guitar play.
Oh, oh, yeah.
With a rueful smile, Drew studies the pictures on the walls of Jesse and the band. There are photos of him with his guitar with long hair, another with dark glasses and short hair. There's one of him with a beard wearing headphones. In another, he sits at a drum kit. The caption reads, "Tribe True Fried and Blue." Now with his headlights blazing, Drew drives through the darkened streets.
It's the same in any language. The brother's a brother.
He parks near a hotel called The Brown and stands at reception in a wide, shiny corridor where two posters with balloons proclaim the wedding of Chuck and Cindy.
Tell how long will you be staying with us?
2 nights.
That coupon I have not seen. You with the Hasbro wedding?
Chuck and Cindy?
I'm leaving Friday.
Okay.
Put it on my company card. Let it rip.
Ooh.
On steps from the lift into a corridor with balloon displays, revelers are kissing and drinking. A guy races along with a girl on his back.
We're not married yet.
Hey. Hey, Rebecca. Don't change the schedule or Cindy will freak out. I've been planning this for a year.
Don't forget, there's a rehearsal dinner in the...
Drew lets himself into his suite and sits, casting his eyes around the spacious room. He reaches for a basket of goodies on the table in front of him.
Chuck and Cindy.
Inside, cards give details of the wedding. He removes a pen and flicks it, revealing one-line messages. Chuck and Cindy wedding, Brown Hotel, June 25, love in life.
Love in life.
He makes calls on his mobile.
Heather, pick up, sis. I'm exhausted. I'm at the Brown Hotel in Louisville. Call me on the cell. Hey, Mom, are you there? Ellen. Hey, it's Drew. You there? Call me back. Somebody call me back.
He looks dejected and presses the TV remote button. A black and white film fills the screen.
That's what happens to a man when he lets a woman take over, George.
You listen, hard laughing boy.
He changes channels.
Do you bring this stuff?
He shakes his head in despair and changes again.
No blinking, no oil.
Here's a knife that you'll really like. This is my chef's knife. These knives are really razor sharp.
Claire Colburn.
It's Drew Baylor. You don't have to call me back. It's all good. What am I saying? I don't even say it's all good. Good night.
He tosses the note Claire wrote him on the table. As he sleeps in the chair, his phone vibrates into action.
Ella?
You have to come home. Mama's decided that she wants to learn to cook.
Oh, no.
I'll be home soon.
Have you cried yet?
A little.
When it happens, it's going to be for days. You should come home. She's out of control.
Wait a second. I'll be right back.
Please come home.
Hello?
Great to hear from you. I didn't expect for you to call. Then again, I did leave you a few thousand numbers. It's Claire Colburn.
Claire.
American Airlines.
Can I call you right back?
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Hello?
Please come home. I want to learn to cook. I want to learn to laugh. I want to tap dance.
It will be my salvation.
She won't stop moving,
Heather?
Drew.
Heather,
we need a decision here.
What's your opinion on the whole burial issue? Because there's a lot of people here with big opinions. And there's a problem with the blue suit that I can't put my finger on. Wait.
How you doing, Mom?
Great. I'm great. We are gonna make it.
Hello.
Drew, it's Ellen. You called me?
Ellen.
Ellen? Ellen! Thank you for calling me back.
I'm so happy you called.
Could you just hold on 1 second?
Hello.
You need to come home, Drew.
I'll be right back.
Hello?
Drew.
Ellen, I called you about that silly goodbye.
Could you hold on for just 1 second?
Yeah, but I'm actually on my way out to dinner.
Just hold a second.
Can we just...
Just in the
just,
middle
I've,
of...
See, I've got to...
Ellen?
Just call me later.
Don't go.
Okay.
Ellen plonks her bag down.
Hello.
Hello, stranger. So, here's
Claire, hold
what's
on.
Great about the Nashville airport.
I just wanted to call you and thank you. So, you know, goodbye, thank you, and...
I'll hold.
Okay.
Hello?
Cremated, don't you look great?
Heather, they really love him here. They're not buying cremation. They don't even acknowledge the word. But I need to call you right back.
Is there anything more important than the conversation we're having?
I will call you right back.
No problem, just dial hell and I'll answer.
I'll call you
right back.
I miss Dad.
Was he a fun guy?
Of course he was a fun guy. Especially in the last few years when you got so busy.
I'll call you right back.
I know you're late for dinner.
I am late.
I'm in Kentucky.
Drew, it was real,
And it was great. And it was really great. Call me anytime, okay? Goodbye. It's just goodbye. You know, it's not goodbye. It's just goodbye. Take care. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
He slumps his head backwards on the seat. He suddenly realizes he has another call waiting and puts the phone back to his ear.
Hello.
Good Lord, did I win the phone lottery?
Tell me about the Nashville airport.
I'm over it. I'm actually almost home now. Are the roses hellish as I told you?
Claire? My dad's dead.
I know.
You knew?
I don't know a lot about everything, but I do know a lot about the part of everything that I know, which is people.
And I thought I was so mysterious.
Trust me, everybody is less mysterious than they think they are.
And they all know me, and I don't know any of them. And I'd never seen a dead body before.
To have never taken a solitary road trip across country, I mean, everybody's got to take a road trip at least once in their lives. Just you and some music.
You have no idea of the sheer volume of my cousin's kid when he cries.
I mean, I think there is definitely a higher spirit.
But I agree, what's left behind finally are the impressions you made on people.
More important is to know where to go. You haven't traveled at all, have you?
I just recently decided that things really are black and white.
And so we all became helpers, which I still can't help. I can't help helping.
Okay, I'll drive back home, at least part of the way. I will take a road trip.
I was actually gonna go with Mitch next year.
Why am I calling him Mitch?
I spent so much time thinking about all the answers to the problem that I forget what the problem actually was.
If you're smart, you'll just wear your shoes and never ask any questions. Just enjoy your footwear.
Do you ever just think I'm fooling everybody?
You have no idea.
Men see things in a box. And women see them in a round room.
Goodness, he was so young here.
He looks at a photo album.
Wow. My mom. Not the one they wanted him to marry. They met in an elevator.
I think I've been asleep most of my life.
Me too. Come pick
me up. She's back at her apartment, dressed in a red t-shirt and sweatpants, her long blonde hair hanging loose. She sits on the floor, laughing as their conversation continues. He's almost talked his battery flat and puts his phone on charge as he carries on talking. He dances with the phone to his ear. She dances in her bathroom.
Good Lord.
She sits cross-legged on the carpet of her sitting room with a magazine on her lap, surrounded by personal memorabilia. He paces around his hotel suite. They're both glued to their phones in animated outpourings to each other.
Do you want to have a beer over the phone?
He ventures into the corridor outside his room, wearing a white dressing gown and green socks. Listening on his phone, he sways to distant music.
Chuck and Cindy.
Cindy and Chuck.
Aha.
I am currently stealing Chuck and Cindy's wedding beer.
He turns to see a man also in a white dressing gown.
You're a friend of Chuck's, right?
Yes.
No, you're not. I'm Chuck.
Of Chuck and Cindy?
Is that Chuck?
It's Chuck.
Who are you?
Drew Baylor, your neighbor.
Oh, you're here for my wedding?
No.
Business?
My dad died. I'm here for his funeral.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't think. That's hard.
It is hard, yeah. No, 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 please.
Oh, shit.
Please, no, 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 Chuck, no, Chuck, no. Chuck, please.
Death, life, and death, and life right next door to each other. There's a hair between them.
Chuck grips him in a tight hug.
We're here for the next 3 days. If there's anything I can do for you...
He takes Drew's phone.
Chuck Asborough. Hi, Claire. Look, if there's anything I can do for you guys, okay? Anything.
Thank you, Chuck.
I love you, Claire. Okay. It's all about family, bro.
Thank you, Chuck.
He hugs Drew again. Bottles are in his dressing gown pocket. He pats Drew, and Drew returns the gesture. Chuck hugs him once more.
Roger.
As Drew moves along the corridor, Chuck points at him in a gesture of friendship. Drew points back. Chuck dances away into one of the rooms. Claire continues the phone call from her foamy bath.
But they say it will hit you. It could be 10 minutes, or it could be 10 years from now.
So it's good that you talk about it, or don't talk about it. Well, we have talked about it, but that's what they say.
That's what they say, huh?
Yes, that's what they say.
I've always wondered this. Who are they?
You know.
Them.
Them?
Mm-hmm.
The inimitable collective them.
And who says we're supposed to listen to them?
They do! Yes, it does.
And I have to get up in 2 hours and be charming.
Going to Hawaii.
You'll get there and have fun.
I'll get there and sleep. It's just a little vacation I traded Roots for.
She plucks the soap suds from her body as she reclines in her bath with the phone to her ear.
I'll let you go.
Wait. When will you be back?
She smiles and trembles in delight.
Hello.
She now lies on her bed.
Still there?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if this whole thing is better on the phone. So much better on the phone. Maybe we should never face each other again.
I enjoyed this.
He's on his bed and flicks the light out.
Hey, you're only 45 minutes away.
You want to meet halfway and see the sunrise?
At this point, it's probably easier to stay up.
You think so?
I think that's what they say.
Now they both drive.
Hey, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Take exit 43.
Okay.
She grips her mobile phone with one hand and takes the other away from the steering wheel to put on lipstick. As dawn begins to break, they speed towards each other on a road through a forest.
I see your headlights. See your red hat.
There you are.
As the two cars approach each other, they both pull partially off the road onto the grass verge. Claire and Drew switch off their headlights and get from their vehicles. They still hold their phones to their ears as they walk slowly to meet. She wears tight-fitting jeans, a dark top, and a red bonnet. He wears an open-neck blue shirt and dark trousers.
Hello.
Hey.
They stop and stare into each other's eyes.
Should we hang up now?
They close up their mobile phones.
Follow me.
They sit on a stone wall, overlooking a wooded valley and a wide, winding river.
We peeked on the phone.
Yeah, I'm a little tired.
Yeah, me too.
They head back to their cars. Now the center of a deserted early morning town with neat streets and displays of scarlet geraniums, Drew is glancing around as he appears in his car.
Last looks.
Claire waits in her car at a road junction. She powers down the window as Drew pulls up.
Have fun in Hawaii.
Started out. There's one right now.
Aloha. All alone.
Aloha. And the sun
went down. They go their separate ways.
As across the hill. And the town lit up.
Outside her home, Drew's mother, Holly, looks away from a car manual and talks to her silver Volvo parked with a bonnet up.
You won't have to feed me.
As she peers inside the engine, the bonnet crashes down on her. Only her wiggling legs are visible as Heather appears.
What are you doing?
She gives a thumbs-up sign from under the bonnet. Later, on the phone...
Mom, are you sure? Are you sure about the... Are you sure about the cremation?
Honey, I don't know when I'm gonna crash, but as of right now, we are learning about the car, and I'm learning organic cooking, I'm gonna tap dance, and later on today, I am going to fix the toilet. It is 5 minutes at a time.
Do you all know about that, out in California, how many people they cremate out there?
No, how many?
80% I read. Get out. I'm not kidding you.
Mom, I think you need to slow down.
Look, everybody tells me that I should take sedatives, but hey, I am out here and I'm making things happen. All forward motion counts.
Sweetheart, when are you coming back?
There's a memorial this Saturday.
Okay, and who's there helping you plan all of this, sweetheart?
Uncle Dale and Bill Banyan.
Her eyes widen in shock.
Bill Banyan is there? Bill Banyan?
Yeah.
He is a con man. He swindled your father out of thousands of dollars.
17 years ago, he did something which almost ruined this family to its very core.
Mother?
Wrapping himself in the nobility of your father's memory.
Are you...
President,
well, he's getting an earful.
Well, I tell you.
Mother! Listen! Focus!
Beware. I know it's all very charming with the pickled things in jars and the southern charm and the hams that hang in the garage until they're so covered with mold you could grow penicillin on them, but I'm telling
you... Are you sure about the cremation?
If Bill Banyan is there, definitely cremation.
And you tell Bill Banyan. I'll be there.
Now Drew's in the hotel lobby.
Hello?
Aloha. I talked to my friend Kendra, who had a girlfriend with a kid who's exceedingly loud, like Simpson. And she's given me a videotape that works. Absolute miracles.
Hey, thanks, Claire.
What? You're already tired of me?
I just haven't slept. I'm sorry. How's Hawaii?
Well, I'm checking out this cute guy.
Why are you telling me that?
Claire's right behind him and pops a Chuck and Cindy wedding balloon. She puts her hands over his eyes.
How could I leave you in distress? I'm taking you out.
He looks amazed as she leads him away.
I thought you were...
What's this?
Hawaii.
When cremation is your preference?
I just got some brochures I want y'all to look at. And these are some choice of urns available here at the Cayman Cemetery. You can take one off.
Claire and Drew browse in the crematorium shop.
Yeah, y'all can look at those. Take those home with you. Make you happy.
As he serves another couple, the young assistant can't keep his eyes off Claire. She reaches for an urn from a shelf and hands it to Drew.
We are shopping for an urn.
She leads Drew to a leather sofa and sits him down. She takes a small American flag on a stick from a counter display and hands him that too. He looks slightly bewildered. With a mischievous smile, she pretends to photograph him.
You can pick this up tomorrow, immediately following the procedure.
The assistant eyes Claire enviously. Drew notices and directs a glance at him. The assistant replies with a look which says, "Why, you and not me." Now in the rain, Drew and Claire stroll in the cemetery, glancing at marble statues of Southern heroes commemorated there.
Jim Morrison of Kentucky.
They glance at a monument to Colonel Sanders and a bust of the man with his distinctive beard. Drew falls down on the cemetery grass, pretending to be dead. Claire takes his arms and drags him along. Back on his feet, he takes a twig from a tree and playfully brushes her bare neck. She fights back. He plucks a pebble from a grave and drops it down her back.
Hey,
He retrieves the wet stone and she playfully slaps him. She sprints away from him, running through a sea of well-kept graves. Later, as dusk falls, they stroll through town.
You're kind of great, Claire. You didn't know that. Sort of amazing.
Oh, come on. I don't need an ice cream cone.
It's not an ice cream cone. What's an ice cream cone?
You know, here's a little something to make you happy. Something sweet that melts in 5 minutes. I'm completely cool with anything you want to say or not say. I don't need it. Besides, Ben is coming in tomorrow. Do you want to hear my theory?
Of course.
You and I have a special talent, and I saw it immediately.
Tell me.
We're the substitute people.
Substitute people?
I've been the substitute person my whole life. I'm not an Ellen. I never wanted to be an Ellen. And I'm not a Cindy either. Although Chuck's lovely.
I'm sure they do.
I like being alone too much. I mean, I'm with a guy who's married to his academic career. I rarely see him, and I'm the substitute person there. I like it that way. It's a lot less pressure.
She hands him a video.
Here. Play this for the loudest kid in the world.
I'm not used to girls like you.
That's because I'm one of a kind.
You don't have to make a joke. I like you without the jokes.
In the lights of a filling station, they study each other's faces.
Get some sleep. I have a personnel interview tomorrow morning, and if I get transferred, Ben will die.
She places her hands on her hips and slowly nuzzles her face closer to his. They touch noses and brush their faces together. They almost kiss. They pull away. She raises her eyebrows, looking vulnerable. He nervously scratches his forehead and brushes a hand through his hair.
Didn't it just feel better? We just didn't do something impulsive. I mean...
Yes.
Hey, now we actually have a shot at being friends for the rest of our lives.
They both nod.
The rest of our lives.
Noisy kids led by Samson play inside Aunt Dora's house. In another room, Dale, Dean, and Banyan sit with Drew.
Okay, now for the celebration proper. We got the military bands, the right mix of 7 speakers, no crybabies.
It's official. Paul, Doug, and Rick are flying in from Florida. Ruckus will reunite for this one evening.
The older men ignore Jesse's excited intervention.
How are we doing on balloons?
I sent to Balloon City. I got a bunch of them.
And Drew, my casket did come in from Lexington, and I gotta tell you, it's quite beautiful.
Look, Drew, I am getting the question constantly, okay? Why isn't he buried in Elizabethtown?
It's not an insult to anybody here.
Was there such a thing as partial cremation?
Ah! Bill Banion, how can you even say such a thing?
Dora from the kitchen.
I know you all love my dad. You can't dismiss my mother's wishes. And we're not from California.
Jesse, can you do something about your son?
Yeah, all right.
A couple good ass kickers might be in line.
I think what Charles Dean wants to say...
I know what he's saying.
Dale looks hurt. Drew stands at the table.
You all have different versions of him that you love a lot. This is ours. My family's record of the last thing he said on the subject. That's the plan. That is the way it's gonna be, guys. Sprinkled at sea. And that's the decision from California.
Dale looks puzzled.
Shit. Oregon. We really are from Oregon.
As they laugh, Banyan pats Drew on the shoulder.
Jesse, I have something for you.
Drew crosses to the kids' room where Jesse is flopped in a chair, out of control. Drew slots in the video.
We're gonna watch this.
One second.
A caption says, Rusty is learning to listen, part 8. A bee female in a red safety hat gets from a 4x4.
Hi. My name's Rusty. I helped build this house a long time ago. But wood-eating insects called termites have compromised the integrity of this once fine structure.
What's that sound?
So today, I'm gonna blow it up.
The kids look mesmerized.
Silence.
Now, if I blow this house up, will you promise to behave and mind your mommy and daddy?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
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 Good. Let's blow it up.
Samson, who sits with Jesse, stares inspired as Rusty grips the detonation plunger.
Joe, we ready to go?
Yeah, Rusty, light it up.
On the screen, a two-story wooden chalet next to a lake.
Fire in the hole! 3, 2, 1.
The kids stare in awe at repeated shots of the shadow being blown to smithereens. The debris falls down in a blanket of rich red flames.
Now let's build a new house.
Later, Dale wanders through to the kitchen where Drew is propped against the worktop drinking beer from a bottle.
Thank you for taking an interest in Jesse.
Later, Drew, Dale, and Banyan stand in the kitchen staring into space as Dora concentrates on her mixture in a saucepan on top of the stove.
Feels good, doesn't it? It's like Mitch is here. I can see Mitch right now, so proud, in that blue suit. Can't you?
Drew glances at a photo of his father with the American flag in front of it. Dora lights a burner on the stove and fills a saucepan from the tap. Drew becomes strangely transfixed with the burner. His face darkens as he watches the blue flame getting hotter and hotter. He glances again at the photo of his father and dashes off in panic. He pulls up in his car at the crematorium and runs to the door.
Stop the cremation! Stop the cremation!
Stop
the cremation! What the hell's going on, man?
Hold on, wait right here.
The young assistant they saw earlier dashes into a back room while Drew waits, getting his breath back in the shop where they bought the urn. The assistant returns, gripping the urn and looking apologetic.
Sorry.
He looks close to tears as he steps closer to Drew with the pot container.
He's your dad, man.
Drew mournfully accepts the urn and puts it in his car. He walks round the vehicle with a troubled expression and deep in thought. He secures the urn with a seatbelt and pats it. When he arrives at the hotel holding the urn, the wedding revelers are in full swing again. Chuck, with a gang of male friends, points his finger on an outstretched arm. Drew points back and walks on, inwardly sighing. The receptionist smiles at him sympathetically. He sees a gang of animated young women. Claire is among them in an evening dress. They exchange a smile. He plonks down on a lobby sofa. Claire joins him. She looks at the urn perched in the middle of them.
Is that... Hey, Mitch.
Holding a drink, she pats the urn.
So what happened to Ben?
Oh. There was a storm in Georgia. They grounded all the planes. And he doesn't like to fly, and
And now they want to speak at some trustees event. Trot out some big ideas.
Claire, I want to see you on the tour of Maker's Mark tomorrow at 10 a.m. sharp.
All right.
All right?
All right. I love this girl. I love this girl.
Woo!
You look great.
Oh, I'm a mess.
You're crazy, Claire. You look amazing.
Thank you.
And this dress?
Did well on the personnel interview, though.
Right. The interview. I forgot.
I know. I'm impossible to forget, but I'm hard to remember.
She smiles. He looks embarrassed. Chuck approaches.
Drew. Loving life, loving you. Hey, you missed the other rehearsal dinner. Okay.
Let's show Mitch the side of his memorial.
Okay.
They sneak off to the ballroom, which is in the process of being prepared for the wedding. Flowers and balloons decorate the room. Partially empty glasses are on tables from an earlier function. Drew stares at a big poster.
Chuck and Cindy, the wedding.
Drew places the urn on the top table.
Here you go, Dad.
Holding her drink, Claire trots over to a microphone on a podium.
Welcome to the annual meeting of people who annually meet. And we'll see y'all again next year.
Very nice. Come on.
I'm just gonna say right now what we're not saying and let the chips fall. Let the chips fall. Let the chips fall where they may. Yes, yes, I may be embarrassing myself, but I'm just gonna say it.
She strides back to the mic.
I like you!
His mouth falls open and he shakes his head.
What?
I think you should eat something.
I've been starving myself all week long.
For Ben.
And I'm gonna eat.
We'll eat in my room.
Oh, room service? Oh, I want cheese. Cheese-related things. No, eggs and fries. With cheese on everything.
Cheese, it is.
Cheese and Coca-Cola.
And don't worry, because as great as you look tonight, you are safe with me.
Of course it's safe. It's a full moon. I look good.
You do look good.
I'm wearing these clothes. I mean, have you ever had unlucky clothes? This dress that you like? Good things have not happened to me in this dress. But I saw it tonight, and I said, I'm gonna give you one more chance. And I refuse to be let down by this dress again. Oh, anyway, forget all that. You're here, and we're together, and it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's almost midnight. Life cannot be so cruel that we don't deserve to be together. To eat.
A corridor with cardboard cutouts of the wedding couple.
Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Cindy.
She kisses the cutout of Chuck.
Wait, where's Mitch?
They race back to the ballroom. The gleaming urn is still where Drew left it on the top table. They hold hands as they walk over the carpeted floor towards it.
I'm sorry Ben missed the flight. He forgot? No storm in Georgia. No trustees. No big ideas. What a fucking jerk.
He's not a jerk. He's a brilliant man who gives himself permission to be preoccupied.
Come on. You know, there is nothing greater than deciding in your life that things maybe really are black and white. And this guy, Ben, who clearly takes you for granted, who serially takes advantage of you, is bad. And what I am saying is good. See what I mean? You shouldn't be the substitute for anybody. This guy should be right here, right now, doing this.
Gripping her cheeks, he kisses her passionately.
Maybe so.
He's lucky I'm not the right person for you.
He kisses her again on the lips.
I know why it's not you, but just tell me so I can see it from your perspective.
See, I know what you deserve.
What do I deserve?
You deserve. You deserve.
Struggling for inspiration, he paces round her.
You deserve.
She doesn't see him pick up Chuck's prepared wedding toast.
A guy who says, I can't imagine a world without you. We will start a winery when we are 70. We will snowboard every December and one year take our kids. And we will always have the twin red Lexuses. License plates reading Chuck and Steve. You deserve all this and more.
It's not you, I know.
She moves closer and they kiss again. And again.
Please don't take this as rejection.
I really don't.
Another kiss, they sink down to the floor.
Ben's very lucky. All he did was kiss.
Most of the sex I've had in my life was not as personal as that kiss.
Next, a table in Drew's hotel room with the remains of supper. A black and white movie is on the television. Claire searches under the bed for her shoe. Drew sleeps soundly in his double bed. The indent of Claire's head is on the pillow next to him. She sits heavily on the bed to try to wake him.
Putting on my shoes now.
She clumps around the room, but he sleeps on.
Sorry.
The morning sun streams through the net curtains as she loudly gathers her things together. She plonks her bag onto the bed. Wearing her black evening dress, she studies him with a smile before picking up her keys from the floor.
I'm walking out the door. Last night's clothes.
She takes a yellow rose from the table and talks to it.
Don't leave, stay. Let's have breakfast.
She discards the rose and forms her hands into a camera to take an imaginary photograph of the motionless Drew.
I will miss your lips and everything attached to them.
She places the rose next to the urn.
See you, Mitch.
With her long blonde hair hanging loose, she strolls along the outside corridor, holding her coat, with the bag on her shoulder, passing Chuck and Cindy wedding balloons and posters on the walls. She gets into the lift. When the lift doors slide back, her mouth falls open and she stares wide-eyed. The party in the lobby is still going on. Raises her hand in a wave as she coyly strides out. Drew wakes up and glances at the empty space next to him. He crosses to the window and sees Claire walking to her car. He rushes outside.
Hey! Hey! Wait up!
Just tell me you love me and get it over with.
Claire, I'm just gonna say this because you deserve it. It's not easy for me, but here goes. 4 days ago, I lost a major American shoe company. Frankly, you could round it off to $1 billion. And by tomorrow afternoon, everyone will know. Something's gonna be published that pinpoints me as the most spectacular failure in the history of my profession, which is all I know how to do. And I've been here this whole time trying to be responsible and charming and live up to this success that doesn't exist. All I really want is to not be here. I'm sorry. I have a very dark appointment with destiny. That's my secret. That's who I am.
That's it?
Yes, that's it.
I'm sorry. Oh, I guess I just thought a small part of you might be a small bit sad to see me go. But I guess this is all mostly about a shoe.
Of course I'm sad about you. But this is just a little bit bigger than you and me. And by the way, I didn't say million. I said billion. $1 billion. That's a lot of million.
She bites her bottom lip and nods.
So you failed.
No, you don't get it.
All right. You really failed. You failed.
He gives her a stop signal with his hand.
You think I care about that? I do understand. You're an artist, man. Your job is to break through barriers, not accept blame and bow and say, thank you, I'm a loser, I'll go away now. Oh, Phil's mean to me. Wah, wah, wah. So what?
I don't cry.
You want to be really great? Then have the courage to fail big and stick around. Make them wonder why you're still smiling.
He lowers his eyes.
That's true greatness to me. But don't listen to me. I'm a Claire.
Well, thank you, Claire.
You're welcome. Now, would you quit trying to break up with me? You're always trying to break up with me, and we're not even together.
I know. Wait. We're not?
She shakes her head.
Of course not. We're the substitute people, remember?
He holds her gaze with a distant look.
I'll see you at Mitch's memorial if I can make it.
He watches with an unsettled expression as she gets into her car and drives away. Next, it's Mitch's memorial ceremony. The ballroom at the Brown Hotel is filled with mourners, young and old. Charles Dean sits next to the silver-haired Dora. Samson sits on a woman's knee and yawns. Drew, Heather, and Holly peep apprehensively into the room before entering. Jesse is backstage.
All right, when I give you the signal, pull the pulley slowly across, all right? Slow and soulful.
Will do. Slow and soulful.
All eyes switch to Holly, who walks in nervously between Drew and Heather.
It is. That's Holly.
Holly.
Dale kisses her.
It's really good to see you.
You look more beautiful than ever.
Thank you.
Holly sees Banyan walking towards her. She grimaces. He changes direction. Drew, his mother, and sister sit at a table decorated with flowers. A banner above the stage proclaims, "If it wasn't this, it'd be something else." Holly glances at a slide projection of she and Mitch in a loving embrace. A middle-aged woman with auburn hair is the first of a number of people who take to the podium on the stage. She holds sheets of paper.
Mitch wrote letters. Never once sent an email.
He was always there for me.
Where are you, Mitch?
And I loved him. And y'all know that. I loved him. Even though he moved to California, God love him, he always came back to his roots.
And I will miss his laugh.
I don't have anything funny to say. And I don't have a funny story to tell. I will tell you, it wasn't easy for Mitch to leave the military and start over again in California.
As the sad-faced old man leaves the podium, Drew fidgets, looking bemused. His mother stares with a curious interest as Bill Banyan is addressing the gathering. He wears a white jacket over a blue open-neck shirt.
And I apologize, per se, for my role in that deal, per se.
And to all of you who put this evening together, it has gone beautifully. And thank you.
Lena, it hadn't hit him yet.
Oh, it will. It will.
Ladies and gentlemen, Holly Baylor.
Holly rises from her seat as Drew introduces her. She slowly walks to the stage, passing a large photo of Mitch, festooned with balloons. On the stage, Heather and Drew give her a hug. She brushes a hand through her shoulder-length brown hair as she turns to the audience.
I'm a little nervous, but here we are. It's been a while. There was the shorthand of a long marriage. We were complete opposites, and it worked. The plan was to send my son to represent the family. I was terrified that you would look at me and see that woman from California who took him away, even though we only lived in California as a family for 18 months, 27 years ago. I always felt it. All because I was standing in an elevator in Tokyo and this handsome captain walked in and on his way home to Elizabethtown, and he was engaged, and so was I, and somehow I hijacked him and took him to Disneyland.
Back in the audience, Heather, who holds Drew's hand, closes her eyes.
Something happened between us that was not part of the plan. We were in love.
She grips the mic and leaves the podium to pace on the stage.
Let me tell you a little bit about life without Mitch. I wanted to get to know about Mitch's car, and it actually ate me. I went to the bank, and the teller looked at me strangely, and I got home, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and my face was still green from a facial mask that I had forgotten to take off. And I called our insurance man of 30 years, whose son Mitch had actually helped to get into West Point, to tell him that Mitch was gone. He didn't call me back for 2 days. Huh? The car, the bank, the insurance man, the world. I mean, nobody truly cared. Not like us. I always wanted to learn to tap dance. So I took tap dance lessons, and I wanted to learn, yep, I did, and I wanted to learn to cook organically, and so I attempted that. And I fixed the toilet. Yep, all by myself. And I wanted to learn to laugh. Why couldn't I be funnier when Mitch was alive? But you know, I figured it out, it takes time to be funny. And it takes time to extract joy from life. So I enrolled in comedy school. Yeah, I did. And I know, I was the oldest one in the class, thank you. And we were told to tell a story, something true, something that really happened to us. So I got up there and I talked about my husband and the love he left behind. A few days after Mitch died, I was walking through the yard and I saw our neighbor, who was a very good friend of Mitch's, Bob, and he saw me coming through the gate and he said, "I am so sorry for your loss." And I knew that he needed to feel that loss too and to share it, and I wanted to help him. And he put his arms around me, he cradled me, and his embrace tightened. Finally, here was somebody who truly cared. And then I felt something else.
Drew looks shocked. Heather's mouth falls open. She covers her face. An old man whispers to Dale in puzzlement.
Something huge.
Now Drew covers his face in disbelief. Women gasp.
Let's just say it. The boner.
The old man twitches in utter shock. Next to him, Dale laughs. Drew laughs. The sad-faced man still looks sad, but his mouth has fallen open.
A boner. That's what I get. That's what I get for trying to do everything myself. Boner Bob, my neighbor.
Charles Dean guffaws. Sad-faced mutters to himself in sadness. Holly glances at the slide projection showing a photo of Mitch in uniform.
Oh, dear.
Drew now looks admiringly at Holly. Heather is smiling.
He rooted for all of you.
Like a Hollywood star, she swings round to the projection of Mitch.
I love you. This is for you, your favorite song. On a Saturday night.
She places the mic on the stage and steps back as the lights dim. A spotlight shines on her. She gracefully, and only a little clumsily, tap dances to the music. Heather laughs in appreciation for a mother she's never truly seen before. On the stage, Holly sways and twirls as the slide projector shows different pictures of Mitch. She waves at the screen as one image dissolves into another as she dances. Drew smiles broadly in enjoyment while applauding. Dale applauds too. Charles Dean looks on, clearly moved by the performance. As Holly shuffles backwards on the shiny stage, Dale gets to his feet in appreciation, clapping his hands. Drew stands too. Others get up. It's a standing ovation for a woman who lost her husband and found herself. As Holly twirls in the spotlight, Heather cries. Not with embarrassment, but with understanding, admiration, and love. Overcome with feeling, Drew steps outside the ballroom and comes face to face with a large framed photograph of his father in the hallway. It seems to take him by surprise. He steps towards it. Looks around and smiles. There in front of him is Claire, who is also smiling. Their eyes lock.
I have this thing for you.
She holds up a red box secured by a clasp.
It's a very unique map. It's for your road trip home.
Right, a map.
You promised, remember?
No, I remember.
She glances curiously at the ballroom door. Inside, Jesse is on stage with his drum kit, flanked by other musicians.
This is for you, Mitch.
Dale lowers his eyes, looking dismissive. Others, including the old man and Heather, show appreciation. Samson stares keenly at his father and the group.
If I leave here tomorrow.
In the hallway outside.
Freebird, huh? Well, I better get back to
Ben.
You finally made it.
Does Ben even exist?
Just
just call me when you get home, and not until. I want you to get into the deep, beautiful melancholy of everything that's happened.
He nods and lowers his eyes thoughtfully. She pats him on the chest.
It's a great nap.
Heather shakes her head wildly, screaming to Jesse's music. Others sway on the floor in frenzy. Dale is now smiling as a man pats him on the shoulder, congratulating him on behalf of his son. Claire and Drew stand in the doorway watching. Dora bounces to the beat. In the wings, a stagehand with headphones strung around his neck holds a pulley rope, waiting to release a large white bird of freedom. Jesse gives him the signal, but the bird has caught fire and trails out towards the audience, leaving smoke in its wake. It lights the banner above the stage, which says, if it wasn't this, it would be something else. Jesse urges the band to play on. Everyone looks fascinated, but unsure, as the flaming bird of freedom swoops above them on its rope. Drew and Claire exchange a concerned glance. Expressions on the faces of the audience turn to panic as the fire engulfs the model bird. They look up in horror, holding out their hands to protect themselves from the spluttering flames. The stagehand stares fearfully at the mayhem and gives up, dropping the ropes. The flying inferno collapses onto a table. There's a mass exodus as smoke fills the room. Claire immediately goes into her life-saving mode, helping people out through the doorway where she stands. The hotel's sprinkler system activates, spouting water over everybody. It drenches the stage, soaking Jesse and his fellow musicians. A dark-haired woman rescues a large black-and-white photo of Mitch from an easel beside the stage. Heather stands soaked with her arms outstretched, looking serene as water cascades over her. Drew is also wet through and stares across to Claire, who stands in the doorway with wet bedraggled hair. She's now smiling, rescue operation successful.
As a specialist in the field of last looks, this one was pretty iconically Claire.
Claire looks back at him with an expression which says, just one of those days, huh? He smiles as he watches her help out the portly figure of Charles Dean in his waterlogged blue shirt, one of the last to leave. The next day, mourners, most of them in dark glasses, stand around a grave.
Friends and neighbors, we are gathered here to say our final goodbyes to my dear friend, Mitch.
In the coffin, a blue suit, medals, and a photo. Dean, his arm in a sling, bumps into the coffin before closing the lid. An assistant engages the mechanism and the casket lurches down. Nursing his arm, Dean looks flustered. Samson watches, wearing a soldier's helmet. The assistant tries again. It sticks once more. Drew, Holly, and Heather try to stifle laughter as the coffin finally falls to the bottom of the hole. Now Drew gets into his car. Samson throws a salute.
Come on, General.
Drew returns the gesture before Jesse leads the boy away. Drew opens the box Claire gave him. He looks surprised and puzzled to see so much in it. He opens a thick folder.
The root of Claire's map, with accompanying music and detailed instructions, would take 42 hours and 11 minutes.
Turn on ignition.
He removes a CD from the folder and slots it into the car's player.
Begin your journey and do not skip ahead.
He drives off, passing the public building where townsfolk waved him in. Just one person stands on the balcony waving him out. He glances at the urn, strapped into the passenger seat, and smiles. The boy on the bike in crash helmet and goggles, who escorted him into town, stands by his bike watching as Drew leaves.
I'm gonna change that tune.
She had laid out the entire road trip and timed it to music she herself had put on CDs.
Top and June. That's life.
The songs, of course, were classic mixtape songs. About her, of course. And the rich flurry of our almost romance.
He squints at a sign ahead, pointing left to road number 60B. He drives straight on.
Tis the song, the
60B.
I preach, my dear friends, you're about to receive on John Barleycorn, nicotine, and the temptations of Eve.
This is the Hombres.
He turns up the volume.
No barking by the sewer sign, hot dog, my razor broke, water dripping up the spout, but I don't care, let it all hang out.
He stops off at a newsstand.
And she had even provided music for what would happen next.
The magazine section.
Down to the minute.
The magazine Global Business Today has a picture of the shoe he designed on the front cover under the headline Fiasco. With trepidation, he glances through it. An inside headline says, Blueprint for a Mess. It chronicles how he, an untested talent, lost $1 billion and nearly ruined the Mercury Shoe Company. Drew gulps in desperation.
You have 5 minutes to wallow in the delicious misery. Enjoy it. Embrace it. Discard it. And proceed.
Drew closes the magazine and is off again in the car.
Hobo songs and railroad again.
Here is a river leading to the Mississippi.
This is America, she wrote. And if everybody gets a vote where their Mitch gets buried, here are a few where my Mitch gets buried. Or scattered.
He scatters ashes from the urn into the river. He hoists the urn high above his head before driving on. Next, he eats chili in a fast food diner.
Raven song, it breaks the night.
Pause for 30 minutes for the greatest chili in the world. And elsewhere in Memphis.
A giant guitar hangs outside a recording studio. Inside, a mic, a drum kit, and a guitar, and a picture of Elvis.
You're not sure what you ought to do.
This would be a good time to stop in at Ernestine and Hazel's and say hello to Russ.
How you doing?
He's hung on to the place for 38 long years.
Right.
He'll tell you a few stories.
Don't you know what I'm talking about?
Look at this.
That's the blues.
And just around the corner, the Lorraine Motel.
He stares up at the balcony of a motel.
The hotel balcony where Martin Luther King drew his last breath.
Inside, he studies the room, now a museum, where Martin Luther King stayed. It's just as he left it. He sees statues symbolizing white and black people at a fast food bar. Two television monitors show archive footage of racial conflict. He stares at the monitors with a disturbed expression. Now a smiling Luther King appears. The caption says, so when Martin got up, he didn't take a text. He just started to talk. Outside the motel, Drew scattered some more of his father's ashes into the air.
His death was only the beginning of his victory. You go across the bridge to first sing Mark Twain's muse, Jeff Buckley's funeral bed. As night air whips through your hair, around your face, and out the other window, you can feel the soul of that dark water, even as you arrive on the other side.
Don't worry of your mind. People are sick and mean sometimes. Don't worry of your mind. They're only worried.
A giant yellow sun sinks down in the sky, leaving a wake of orange down the street. He drives on through the dark and into the light of the next day with its new realizations.
Some music needs air. Roll down your window.
He drives past timber houses set among trees. He glances at the urn. He remembers when he was a little boy in the passenger seat of his father's car.
All right, good.
I love you too.
All right. Where do you want to go?
Texas.
Kentucky.
On Claire's map, there's a photo of a statue of Jesus with outstretched arms. He sees a real thing ahead and a dinosaur with a fish in its mouth. He arrives at a park called Dinosaur World to scatter more ashes. It's dark again. He looks up at a starlit black sky.
Good morning. How you doing?
In the morning light, he checks his watch and glances at Claire's map. He stops and steps admiringly towards an old tree, now a monument in Oklahoma City.
The Survivor Tree. It's my favorite tree in the world. And I like trees.
A wide river glistens in the early sun. A road sign shows he's on Route 66. The map has a photo of a large round barn. He sees it at the roadside. He has a flashback to his sacking.
This once highly anticipated product may actually cause an entire generation to return to bare feet.
Hit my tracks. So well I could not get back.
Sadness is easier because it's surrender.
Yeah, my way was
I say, fine. Make time to dance alone. With one hand weaving mine. Free.
On a tree-lined country track, he dances, wildly throwing his arms about, with only the tall trees for company.
Rest your head on me, my dear. It took a world of trouble, took a world of tears. It took a long time to get back here.
He drives on a wide, deserted road under a cloudy sky. He turns another page in Claire's map book. He passes a road sign on a neat grass verge, saying welcome to Wichita. He turns to the urn.
Look at us. You with your many almost great projects, me with my fiasco.
Oh, God.
As soon as this is over, we'll
both
go
of us working
home.
So hard. For what?
To plant the seeds of justice in our bones.
We should have taken this trip years ago.
His eyes water, the white lines in the middle of the road flash by. He turns another page.
And the fact that I'm going to go home and kill myself is really not good.
When the bells of freedom ring.
Phil?
No.
With pain on his face, he carries on talking to the ashes of his father. His words are drowned out by Claire's CD. Again. In a flashback, he remembers himself as a little boy, he and his father, waving their arms into the air. As he drives, he waves an arm in the air now, his face creased in the emotions of mourning and regret. The sky above turns to blue. Through the open window of the car, he scatters more ashes as he speeds along the deserted straight road that stretches out ahead, beyond visibility.
Don't get lost. Proceed to the second largest farmer's market in the world. Located on the second largest farmer's market in the world Boulevard. For some essentials for the rest of your journey home.
He slots in another CD from Claire's book. Now he cruises up and down hills on a country lane, his car wheels churning up clouds of dust. He strains to read a sign in a roadside field. It says, world's second largest farmer's market.
English girls are pretty when they play guitar. Crazy like a day, just a break and I sure were for.
With Claire's instructions, he strides through the bustling market.
Go to the pet area. Look inside the book about Springer Spaniels.
He sees a revolving bookcase full of dog books. He plucks a note from one. It says, go to the shoe area. Smiling with excitement, he dashes to the stall selling shoes.
Find a pair of Spasmodicas on display and look inside.
Ahead, on one of the displays, the shoe he designed.
Here, you have reached a fork in the map. You can go to your car and the rest of the directions will take you home. Or
Look for a girl in a red hat who's waiting for you with an alternate plan.
He glances around the massive market, which stretches on further than the eye can see. Among signs stuck to a tree, one points to success, another to failure. He runs, brushing through the crowds, passing one stall after another with candy-striped canopies, trying desperately to find a special girl in a red hat. He sprints on, past people in a variety of hats, holding flowers, balloons, and farm produce. He stops near a man with an apron selling confectionery from an ornate barrow. He glances towards a carousel. A sign advertises thrilling rides. He looks back along the market avenue. Suddenly, a lot of people seem to be wearing a red hat of some kind. He checks the carousel again. The horses rise up and down on their poles without passengers. Drew stands amid crowds of people with a look of isolation. Next, he strolls slowly, his body jostled by the throngs as they lead their lives. He pauses again with a look of desperation. Suddenly, his features change. With her back to him, not far away, a girl with a red bonnet on top of long blonde hair. She also seems to be searching. She turns, and a smile comes to her lips as their eyes meet. He smiles too, holding her gaze. Behind Drew, a shopper strolls past with red roses. Behind Claire, a man carries a tall bouquet of mixed flowers. Claire's peach-colored features light up with delight as her smile becomes broader. Drew runs to her and they hug lovingly, his mouth nestling in her neck. He kisses her passionately on the lips. It's a long, lingering kiss. A dark, shadowy figure in silhouette walks towards brilliant, distorted light in the distance.
No true fiasco ever began as a quest for mere adequacy. A motto of the British Special Service Air Force is, those who risk, win. A single green vine shoot is able to grow through cement. The Pacific Northwestern salmon beats itself bloody on its quest to travel hundreds of miles upstream, against the current, with a single purpose. Sex, of course, but also life.
The end.